You're listening to Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno, supported by HomeWatch Caregivers, whose mission is to preserve dignity, protect independence, and provide peace of mind for their clients and their loved ones by providing exceptional home care.
News Talk 1360 WCHL is pleased to present Caring Connections with your host, Nicole Bruno. Nicole has over 15 years of experience as a geriatric social worker and administrator, working in the long-term care industry to include skilled nursing care, Alzheimer's care, adult daycare, and home care. She also worked as a family caregiver. In addition, Nicole co-founded a nonprofit in the Triangle that specializes in support for caregivers. And now, Caring Connections.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode of Caring Connections on 1360 WCHL. Today we will be discussing Advanced Directives, The Uncomfortable Gift. Joining us today is Cooper Linton, Vice President of Marketing and Business Development for Hospice of Wake County. His responsibilities include overseeing marketing and community engagement for Hospice of Wake County and its three divisions. He also oversaw the design and construction of Wake County's first freestanding hospice home and end-of-life care campus. Cooper's interest in advanced directives emerged from a combination of personal and professional experiences focused on honoring the wishes and dignity of people at end of life. Welcome, Cooper.
Thank you for having me, Nicole.
I'm very excited to talk about this topic, and that might sound funny, but I think advanced directives are very important for all of us to have in our lives.
I would agree.
You were so kind to provide us some of the top 10 things that people often don't know about advanced directives, and I'd like to highlight a couple of those with you now. One thing I think is very important for people to think about is that there is no perfect age at which to set up an advanced directive.
That is absolutely true. We tend to think of planning for end of life for people who are older. We think of that as, well, as I get older, I'm going to need to do this. I'll think about this as I age. In reality, we don't know when we're going to need these instruments. We don't know when we're going to need to make tough decisions or have people make tough decisions on our behalf. So we need to prepare now.
That's right. I mean, even when you go into the hospital for a simple procedure, no matter what age you are, they ask you what your wishes are.
And they're not asking you to be polite.
Yeah.
They recognize the importance of having these documents, having them on file, having them accessible, because the reality is these medical professionals hope they don't need your advance directives, but if they do need them, they need them right now.
Setting up advance directives does not mean you give up control. You are taking control in advance. That is a great statement.
It's a painful misconception that people have, that by signing these documents, they're giving up their ability to make their own decisions, or that they're turning their most precious decisions about their own health over to somebody else. And that is a misconception that's understandable. But in reality, what you're doing is documenting your wishes and creating a legally binding document that reflects what you want and then appoints someone legally to represent you when you're unable to represent yourself. So you're really taking advanced control, or at least advanced influence, of your health care.
I think people, there's a common misconception, and one of my hats that I wear is a social worker, and one of my responsibilities as a social worker at one point in my life was to talk to residents in a skilled nursing facility about their wishes. And I think people oftentimes view it, at least in my experience, that when you're talking about your wishes, you're saying what you don't want and you're giving yourself a death sentence.
Well, advanced directives can be looked at as, you can either couch it in the negative of, this is what I don't want done to me. But I think you can also flip it around and document what you do want done for you. And I think there's a distinct difference between having something done to you and having something done for you or on your behalf. There's a secondary value in these documents of freeing up your loved ones to act on your behalf and giving them the freedom of feeling like they're doing something for you and not being afraid that by making decisions that they're doing something to you against what you would have wanted done.
That makes sense. And before we get too deep into that topic, for the viewing audience or listening audience who may not know what an advance directive is, can you talk about what that is?
Well, there's really two basic types. The first is a living will. And we often think about wills as, well, you'll use my will after I die and divvy up my final
stuff.
Possessions.
Yeah.
That's right. Who gets the television and the Velvet Elvis painting? But what it really comes into is The living will is how do I want my health care to look at the end of my life or preceding the end of my life? And it's capturing what you do or do not want done to you. The second advanced directive is a health care power of attorney. And that also gets confused with another legal document, which is the durable power of attorney.
Yes. People oftentimes think, oh, I'm power of attorney, but they can only write checks. They don't realize that one is different from the other.
They're extremely different. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, people will show up in healthcare facilities with a durable power of attorney so that you could, you know, sell your loved one's car, but you're not really able to do anything to help them medically. The healthcare power of attorney is very different. It is limited in its scope strictly to healthcare decisions, and it is only valid if you are unable to make your own decisions. So it doesn't mean that by appointing a healthcare power of attorney, you're giving up control now of your own health care. That person can't do anything to you or for you regarding your health care until you're unable to do it. So you're really not giving up anything. You're just guaranteeing influence in the future.
Can you tell me, what's an example of not being able to make a decision? What would make a person unable? How would you know when that would go into effect? Because I think sometimes people fear, well, you know, maybe I fainted, so does that mean somebody, or
right.
or
it's
maybe I have mild
situation.
Cognitive impairment, so can I still make a decision then?
The argument's been made, I've had a mild cognitive impairment since birth, but I'm still legally able to make my own choices. What we have to really look at is, when are you unable to express your own wishes? And that decision is not made by the person who's the healthcare power of attorney.
Okay.
That decision's actually made by the medical staff. There are times it can go to a court setting, and I'm not a lawyer, and I don't want to venture in down that path. But you can't just walk in and say, well, I'm so-and-so's healthcare power of attorney, and I'm now making their decisions. It's when someone is they're long-term unconscious, they're in a persistent vegetative state, they are unable to participate, consent, or decline care. It's not that they passed out in the grocery store and someone's going to suddenly decline to have them have health care services.
Sure. So then what are some of the things, going back to the living will, that you can put in a living will? Can you put anything you want in a living will? Are there typical things that you would find?
Well, there are typical things. There is a standard living will that's already approved by the North Carolina Bar Association, and it's a free document.
Okay.
You can download it for free. You can get it from a number of locations for free. And that document has some predefined elements in it that talk about whether you'd like to have artificial hydration and nutrition, whether you'd like to have an artificial ventilator, a respirator that would breathe for you. Those sorts of questions can come up. And you're able to document what you do or don't want done there.
Okay, great. Well, hold that thought, and we're going to take a short break. I am here today with Cooper Linton, Vice President of Marketing for Hospice of Wake County, talking about advanced directives, the uncomfortable gift, on 1360 WCHL, and we'll be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on News Talk 1360 WCHL is supported by HomeWatch Caregivers. And now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. I'm here today with Cooper Linton, Vice President of Marketing and Business Development for Hospice of Wake County, talking about advanced directives, the uncomfortable gift, on 1360 WCHL. And I'm your host, Nicole Bruno. So, Cooper, the topic, advanced directives, the uncomfortable gift. It is rather uncomfortable to talk about advanced directives, isn't it?
It is. In some families, it's almost taboo.
In mine, it is.
And thankfully, in mine, it was not.
Oh,
we talked about these things very openly, and I later realized that it's a very uncomfortable topic for other folks. And I think there's cultural and familial differences that we just have to recognize.
Mm-hmm.
But the topic is uncomfortable. Well, we call it a gift because if you do these things, you're really giving a gift to your family and loved ones. And it may be uncomfortable, but it's worthwhile and it's meaningful for the people you care about.
So how do you get an advance directive? You know, say I'm listening to the show today and I want to look for more information. How do I find that?
There's several places you can get it. You can go to hospiceawake.org and navigate through the website. You'll find links to the documents. You can call our office at 919-828-0890 and ask for some assistance with advance directives, and we'll connect you, and you can come by and pick them up. You can often get them from an attorney's office if you want, or you can download them from several locations on the web.
Okay. Does it cost money to do an advance directive typically?
It does not if you use the predefined forms.
Okay.
There are several forms that are available. A living will that's already approved for North Carolina, a health care power of attorney that's approved. There's also the five wishes document, which is approved in North Carolina. It's not approved in all states.
What is the five wishes document?
The five wishes document was a document that originated in Florida that talked about the things that you might want at end of life. And it has five wishes. Who's the person that I want to make healthcare decisions? The kind of treatment I want or don't want? How comfortable do I want to be? How do I want people to treat me? And what do I want my loved ones to know? The first two of those questions are essentially the healthcare power of attorney and the living will. And that five wishes document has been approved as a valid advance directive in the state of North Carolina.
So that almost seems like it makes the uncomfortable gift more comfortable, calling it a wish versus a statement of what I want when I die.
And it's a more layperson's document as opposed to the two state-approved documents, which read exactly like they are. They're legal documents. People ask me which one is better. I say the one that you filled out is the best one. You know, it find the one that works for you and use it. The only wrong answer is to simply not do it.
I was a caregiver for my grandfather, and I was faced with an advance directive issue near end of death for him, and he got very ill. He ended up with a pneumonia, and we had to send him out via ambulance to the ER, and I thought it was a pneumonia. We did find out it was, and I sent them. I gave them a full report. These are his meds.
Absolutely.
This is what's going on with him. I had to take care of the baby, get something settled with that before I could then join him at the hospital. And when we got to the hospital, even though they had the advance directives, he was fully intubated. He had everything done for him, which were against his wishes. And I found an interesting statistic that between 65 and 76% of physicians whose patients had an advance directive were not aware that it existed.
You know,
why is that?
Because you can't use what you can't find.
Okay.
And I think it's part of two issues. One is that many times people fill out these forms and they'll tell me, well, I have them, but I have them in the safe at the bank.
Oh, well, that's not a good place for them.
Don't get sick on Friday night.
Yeah.
So you've got to have these documents where you can find them. The second one, which is more related to your story, Nicole, is that when in doubt, people are going to go into life-saving measures. And usually you need an advocate to bring to light the fact that you have these documents and that you expect to have them enforced.
And I just couldn't be there in that ER ride, the ambulance ride, so that's probably what happened. And they felt, you know, and when they told me, they said, well, we thought this was going to be reversible.
Right.
And so that's what, but then it was a big, really big deal to get what was done reversed.
That is challenging.
It was very hard. We ended up having to, with a witness, two physicians in the room, myself, a nurse, ask him when he was well enough for the tubes to come out, do you want them put back in? And then he shrugged his shoulders.
Oh.
And then they said, you need to get him to make a decision. So I had to ask him again, and then he said no. But so the reality is that still was his wish, but it's a very hard thing.
And thankfully he had it documented, and that document supported his answer. Unfortunately, sometimes people never regain consciousness to give that consent or decline. And that's when you really have to enforce those documents and have some challenging discussions. And not challenging in that they're adversarial. They're just tough topics. I've recently done this with my own family members. And it's a lot easier to talk about when in advance.
Yep.
In that moment when it's going on, there's a lot of emotion. And it invariably seems to happen when everybody's exhausted in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Those topics are much harder to have when you're not prepared
and when
you don't truly know what that person wants. And that really lends credence to why these documents are needed and why they need to be kept where they can be found. And then they need to be updated. I mean, once you've done them, doesn't mean you've done them for life. Things change.
So regarding the kept where they can be found, where should people keep them?
Well, one is put a copy on file with your doctor, because part of this issue is that if you have these documents but you haven't discussed them with your health care providers, and not just your doctor, all your health care providers, take these documents, give them copies, have a discussion with them, and let them really understand what it is you do and do not want. And also, who's in charge if you're unable to be in charge? Who is your health care power of attorney?
Should they have a copy? Wouldn't you recommend that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Your health care power of attorney should have them. I encourage people, particularly in large families, to give copies not only to the person who is in charge, but to the people who aren't. Because part of understanding who is in charge is so you don't have to have a family battle to figure out who is and who isn't, and you have three people thinking they're in charge when in reality they don't have any legal standing.
And then there's all those hurt feelings when the time comes.
It's better to handle that stuff up front.
Yes. I've also heard people say, you know, keep a copy in your glove box in your car. You're more likely to die in a car accident than...
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
The reality is the EMS may not be digging through your glove box looking for documents.
Sure.
They're probably trying to get you out of the car and get you to the hospital. But it's not like having these documents available creates any liability for you. There's no real specific information that someone can steal out of these documents and use against you. So there's no disadvantage to having them around.
All over the place.
Absolutely.
Paste them on your wall for wallpaper.
It's been tested and proven that you cannot have them tattooed. They will not accept that. Actually, someone tried.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. I'm here today with Cooper Linton, Vice President of Marketing and Business Development for Hospice of Wake County, talking about advanced directives, the uncomfortable gift, on 1360 WCHL. We'll be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on News Talk 1360 WCHL is supported by Homewatch Caregivers. And now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. I am here today with Cooper Linton from Hospice of Wake County talking about Advanced Directives, the Uncomfortable Gift on 1360 WCHL. And I'm your host, Nicole Bruno. So right before the break, we were talking about where to put those Advanced Directive forms so people could find them in the case of emergency. Do you have any stories of what happens when people don't have them?
One of the greatest motivations for talking about this and trying to get this story out is in our work at hospice, what we see is we see families come in sometimes to the hospice home, sometimes in their own homes, and the families haven't had these discussions. Mm-hmm. And you can see the families going through an enormous amount of emotional angst. Then they're already in the process of losing someone that they love to the natural consequences of disease. But then they begin to see breakdowns in their own family. And they're not only losing their loved one, they're beginning to lose the relationships that they have with their siblings, with aunts and uncles, even parents and children going through this.
Yeah, that loved one often tends to be the glue that holds the whole family together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the emotions around this are very high. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to look at someone else's mortality without having to confront your own. And that's painful for folks, and it's emotional for folks. And we've actually seen families dissolve into actual fights over this because no one was actually in charge, and they were trying to get consensus among a family. And frankly, it's hard to get consensus on which movie to watch.
Right.
It's a lot harder to get consensus on what decisions to make regarding health care.
And what mom would want.
And what mom would want, since she's not able to say it for herself. Those are painful discussions, and there's no do-overs. We really need to get it right and document it.
So I guess we would say to the listener, save your family from that turmoil.
Give them the uncomfortable gift of planning ahead and sharing it with them and discussing it with them. It's okay to talk about. The human condition is mortal.
Mm-hmm. So there's something I've been hearing bantered about, and I don't know a lot about it. Could you talk a little bit about the MOST form?
The MOST form, the Medical Order for Scope of Treatment, is what it's called in North Carolina. Other states have it under different names, but it's essentially a document that you fill out with your physician. In this state, you have to fill it out once a year with them.
Oh.
You have to update it every year. And it goes through some detailed questions about what you do and do not want done. And it converts those wishes into an actual medical order that's signed by both you and your physician. And it goes in the chart and can go with you to different healthcare settings. And so it's not just a legal document, which you should also have, the advance directives, but it's a medical capturing mm-hmm. of those wishes into an actual medical order that travels with the patient.
Okay. So that
it's a great document.
Yeah. Out of all these documents you've talked about, though, if I were going to do one, which one should I do? Or two? I mean,
if you were going to do one or just two, if you have someone in your life that you can truly trust and trust their judgment, then I would set up a healthcare power of attorney.
Okay.
If you truly trust that person's judgment,
mm-hmm.
If not, having the living will. And if you don't have a person in your life that can be a good healthcare power of attorney,
what do you do?
If you have advanced illness, I suggest having that conversation with your physician and using the
okay.
MOST form,
okay.
and let your physician be the advocate for you.
Okay.
Otherwise, have that living will and have it on file with every healthcare provider that you use.
So before we close, I know that you've brought some great resources with you that you wanted to share, and we'll have them available on chapelbarrel.com, but if you want to just highlight them for a couple of seconds here.
There's about three that are fantastic. Caringinfo.org is a great website. Putitinwriting.org, and also the AmericanBar.org has a consumer toolkit online that you can go through to help fill out these documents, and those resources are all free.
That's great. Free is wonderful. We don't get much for free these days. That's a good thing, especially having to do with legal-related issues. So that's
free
wonderful.
Free legal stuff. That's great.
Thank you for joining Cooper Linton, Vice President of Marketing and Business Development for Hospice of Wake County, and I, as we discuss the importance of advance directives today on 1360 WCHL. As always, you may email your caregiving-related issues to caring@1360wchl.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
The purpose of Caring Connections is to educate listeners to help improve the quality of life for families, for professional caregivers, as well as for those people afflicted with Alzheimer's disease.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno is supported by HomeWatch Caregivers and can be heard Saturdays at 10 a.m. Email questions to caring@1360wchl.com. Caring Connections is a presentation of News Talk 1360 WCHL.